We get our news in lots of different ways. And besides the history of how we receive news, there's also kind of generational differences in how we receive our news. A lot of our younger folks, particularly those in their 20s and maybe a little older too and younger, kind of get their news through social media, and it's very immediate, very quick. My generation, it's a big skip from the 20s to my generation, but my generation tends to read newspapers, watch TV, you know, watch things. I was watching the news the other night. My youngest daughter was home, and there was a story on, you know, breaking news. And my daughter said to me, I read about that yesterday. You know, it's kind of like, what, everything's breaking news. Different generational ways of watching, a different history too. Social media, there's the networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. For those of you with cable, there's CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. I've noticed in the 24-hour cycle of news that we now experience, pretty much it's the same story being covered every hour. It's just someone else is talking about it. Someone else is talking about it, and they bring in their own crew, and they talk about it. And then each of the three has, you know, a different bend to it, different ways of expressing it. But the story is told. So I tend to be one of those people. If I'm a lot of things happen here at night at church. If I get home, I'll flip on the TV and watch one of those. I tend towards one of them. I tend to watch MSNBC for some reason. But I tend to listen, flip to CNN, see what's going on. And hear the story, at least if I haven't had a chance during the day. Also like to read the paper. I actually like the paper itself. I like to walk down the driveway in the morning, pick up that piece of paper, make the coffee, and just to do this, you know. A lot of folks read their paper online. I'm sure in my lifetime this probably will go away, and we'll read papers online. But that's another way of watching news. When I grew up as a young boy, and some of you may identify with this, basically you watched the news in the evening. I don't know if this was your experience. You watched the nightly news at around 6 o'clock, at least we did in my family, and you'd watch the local news around 6-ish. And then after that news came the nightly news, the kind of national news, international news, which actually lasted for a half hour. And when you think of it, actually 20 minutes, because they had to have time for commercials. So each day, what we hear now in 24 hours is told in 20 minutes. And I look back at that, and how did they make those kind of choices and present things? My family tended to watch NBC, my parents, growing up. I think it's because the local news that we watched was NBC. For those of you who may be from the New York area where I grew up, there was Chuck Scarborough and Sue Simmons. Dr. Frank Field gave the weather. It was on at 6 o'clock. And that was kind of a regular rhythm. And interestingly, it's because we watched that, we then watched the Huntley-Brinkley Report. It was David Brinkley and Chet Huntley. That's kind of where our family kind of watched its news. But there was also, that was NBC, and then on CBS there was Walter Cronkite at that era when I was younger. And ABC, I think it was Peter Jennings at the time. And Walter Cronkite was someone known to be a voice at that time. He was the anchor for 19 years on CBS. And there's some kind of almost iconic images of him when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, his reporting of that. You see that, this kind of emotion that came over him. Many reporters never showed emotion when reporting things. He's also an iconic figure when it was the first landing on the moon. Remember his taking off his glasses and just shaking his head like, this is unbelievable what we've just, you know, that iconic image that we have. So while I didn't watch Walter Cronkite as much as Huntley Brinkley, Walter Cronkite was the newscaster in New York for many years. Parenthetically, when he passed away, his funeral was at St. Bartholomew's in New York, an Episcopal church right on Park Avenue, if you know, just north of Grand Central. But he had a line every night when he would end the news report. You probably remember it. It's also iconic. He'd do the news report, and he'd look at the camera and say, "And that's the way it is, August 5th, 2018. That's the way he ended every report. "That's the way it is." And he'd give the date. And it's a great line. But I remember when I was in high school, I don't remember what the reporting was that night, but I remember sitting there listening to him say, "And that's the way it is," saying to myself, "No, Walter, that's not the way it is. That's not the way it is." I don't know what the story was at the time, but I know how he meant that line. But I had experienced that line in a different way growing up. I know when I was growing up, this was in the decade that really influenced me is the 60s, the 1960s. I'm giving away my age here. The Vietnam War was going on. John F. Kennedy had been assassinated. Bobby Kennedy had been assassinated. Martin Luther King was assassinated. It was an era of civil rights, fighting for civil rights, racism. It was just this incredible era. I remember as a young teenager, I mean, I woke up to my 15th birthday to Bobby Kennedy being assassinated. He was assassinated on my birthday. I remember that as a young boy and wondering what is going on. I'd go to high school each day. I went to high school in Manhattan. I would ride the train, the subways into Manhattan and go through some of the most the urban poverty, the most incredible urban poverty I've ever seen in my life every day. And that had an influence on me. And I remember kind of saying to myself, why? And I remember the line being used, not in my family, but people around me. I would hear it when you'd say, why? People would say, "It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is." Why is there racism? Why is all this going on? It's just the way it is. Why is there this incredible poverty? You know, why is this? It's just the way it is. That's how I had heard that line. So when Walter Cronkite would say, "That's the way it is," you know, that's not what he meant. But that line came to me. And I say all this because I think the gospel reading today talks about just after the feeding of the 5,000. You know the story of the feeding of the 5,000. The apostles, to me, the followers of Jesus, are us. And they're so honest. And if you remember the story, because it leads into today's story, Jesus is gathered, and it's described as thousands of people, and it's towards the end of the day, and it's time to eat. And Jesus is saying, you know, it's in a sense, it's time to eat. And the apostles are saying, well, they have to be sent home. There's not enough food. It's the way it is. It's not enough food. And Jesus sees it differently. Jesus says, there's a boy here with some fish and some bread. So Jesus said, well, you know, have him share that. And the story is told of a miracle where everybody is fed. You know, the followers of Jesus are these, it's the way it is. There's a scarcity. There's not enough. There's just so much. Not enough. And yet Jesus speaks of abundance, speaks of sharing, speaks of making an incredible difference. And whether that, there's different ways of understanding that miracle story. Some will take it literally, some will take it figuratively, some will take it mythically, whatever. I tend to come from the point where that boy shared what he had and everybody there shared what they had because no one thought they had enough. Because we tend to think that way. None of us have enough. We don't have enough. There's not enough. So why share it? So I got to protect it. And they shared and something happened. As the story said, and there was an abundance. There was leftovers at the end of this experience. The followers of Jesus were living in this scarcity. It's not enough. It's the way it is. But Jesus is calling them to give and share what they have, and there's this abundance. And so today's gospel is those followers are coming. Some of them are coming to Jesus the next day across the sea, and Jesus says, you're just coming because you want more bread. You're just coming because you want more to eat. But let me bring this to a deeper level. Let me bring this to a life of abundance. Let me bring this to a life of a God who loves you and shares grace abundantly in your life. That's the true bread of life. That we can move from this, not enough, I don't know, it's the way it is. Nothing's going to change. It's just the way it is. To this idea of Jesus saying you cannot imagine the abundant love that God has for you and the abundance that we're called to share in our lives. Just not just bread and fish, but the abundance of sharing our lives and making a difference. Because it's not just the way it is. We can live into God's dream, God's hope. And as you know, as Bishop Curry so often says, to step out of the nightmare that we have created into the dream that God has for creation. So as we go forth this day, let us move into that abundance, into that living that in our lives. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's so challenging to us. There's a reality there. But to come from a place where it's not just the way it is. We look at our world today. We look at our country. We can't just sit and say, it's just the way it is. No, it's not. It can be something different. And we're called to feed on this bread of life that we come together in Eucharist to share, but to go forth to be a bread of life, to be a blessing, an abundant blessing to the community and world around us.